The House Education Committee for Wednesday, May 11th, 2005 is called to order. First order of business today will be Senate Bill 755. And I have Senator Walker, Beth Ann Darby, and Jim Green. First panel. First panel, looks like the only panel, but we'll see.
Oh, okay. There you are. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. It's delightful to be here in front of my counterpart committee. I'm Senator Vicki Walker, State Senator in District 7, and we're here today on Senate Bill 755 that I had drafted this session as a response to, the Valera case here locally in the Salem-Kaiser School District, because the district refused to turn over the records of that case, and Mr. Valera has now been convicted, and they still refuse to turn over the records. And Madam Chair, members of the committee, sex abuse and child abuse is a very serious problem, as you all well understand. And we've had a number of cases during our legislative session about teachers, unfortunately, who have committed these crimes, and coaches. And it's a real black stain on the teaching profession, because they are admirable people who get involved in this profession. But like any profession, there are bad actors, and we want to make sure that we take care of the bad actors. What Senate Bill 755 will do is open up the disciplinary records of a school district employee, not just a teacher, any school district employee, convicted of a crime listed in the statutes, and those are all pretty serious crimes. And it will, prior to disclosure of that record, the district can remove personally identifiable information that would disclose the identity of a child, a crime victim, or the employee who made the report, because we do not want retaliation taken on behalf of these folks. And in fact, I was on my back to school legislative day, I went to my old alma mater, Butte Creek Elementary School, between Silverton and Molalla. I went there in the eighth grade and graduated from the eighth grade there, and Senator Beyer graciously accompanied me there. And one of the questions that the counselor of the school and the principal addressed to both of us was the fact that when they make a complaint about child abuse or sex abuse to the Department of Human Services, the department gives that information to the police, which they're supposed to do, but then the police make the information available about the complainant to anyone who asks. And that's problematical, because then the folks who got complained against go back to the teacher or the district employee and harass them. So she's asked me to look into that matter, and we are doing that, and that's just an aside note here. So at any rate, this was a very it seemed like an easy bill to work with from the concept, but there were certain nuances that we wanted to make sure that we protected folks who were innocent, because in our country, you are innocent until proven guilty. It's really a great system of justice that has worked well for over 200 years. So I worked closely with Mr. Jim Green of the Oregon School Boards Association, and also with Jim's brother, who is a detective, and he came in and testified about this bill, and then Ms. Beth Ann Darby with the Oregon Education Association. The reason that we did not want to release the records of a teacher or a school district employee unless they've been convicted is because we don't want a witch hunt. Sometimes it's we have to face reality, but sometimes these accusations are made and they're not true. They're found to be unsubstantiated. So we made it very clear that these records would not be released unless there was a conviction, so that we could preserve the reputation of these people who have been wrongfully accused. I have been provided with the -4 amendments that your administrator has worked on, and I have some concerns if you would like me to address those. Okay, thank you. First of all, I would say that the new sections that you want to add on page 1 come under section 1, and I have concerns that they're not coming under section 2, because if you place all of those amendments under section 1, it eliminates private schools. So private schools would not be subjected to any of the things that you have suggested in your dash 4 amendment. I believe that pedophilia, sex abuse, child abuse knows no bounds of whether they're in a private school or a public school, and I don't think they should be exempted. The other concern I had, well, I don't have a concern with reporting something in writing. I think that's fine. I think it's being done now, but we also address that in a companion bill that I have in Ways and Means, that we're trying to figure out how to get it out of Ways and Means right now because of the current Ways and Means process being turned on its head. But we have Senate Bill 749, which requires each school to develop procedures and policies around child abuse and sex abuse reporting. And we address that there. I don't mind readdressing it. Then I think I'll let the other folks talk about the concerns they have here about some of these things in the amendment. I asked Cindy Hunt this morning and asked her to be here in case you had any questions. I didn't quite understand on the amendment on line 24 on the first page. You say on page 2, line 33, delete the parenthetical disclosure of employee disciplinary records. And I thought, well, does that mean we're not going to apply that to charter schools? But Cindy assured me that the reason that was deleted is because you had changed what was going on in Section 1, and so that just deleted the parenthetical. So that's why that was listed there. So other than that, that's all the concerns that I had about the amendments, because I think Ms. Darby's going to address the concern she has about suspending a teacher. And I guess that goes to the issue that I have, and that's why I worked with both these folks as we developed this legislation, is that if you suspend a teacher for an allegation of child abuse or sex abuse, and that allegation is not true, the teacher will suffer consequences as a result of that, because they'll be suspended, they'll be off duty. I don't know how long it will take to process these. And these two folks will be able to tell you there is a pretty strong reaction if there's credible evidence. And if there's not, I'm not sure you should be placed on administrative leave. So with that, Madam Chair, if you don't mind, I'd like to turn it over to these two folks.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association. And just to echo what Senator Walker said, we work very closely with her and her committee on this bill, primarily because it's an issue of liability for our school districts. If there isn't adequate reporting going on, and if actions are not taken with regard to this, which they should be taken, the district has liability, obviously. And we want to make sure that the law is very clear on what happens when a report is made and who that report is made to, and that the investigation that is ongoing with regard to a complaint of any type of child abuse is done through DHS and the proper law enforcement agencies. We had worked through some issues about investigations with regard to school districts. That's not a role for a school district to take on. That's law enforcement's role. And as Senator Walker mentioned, my brother's a detective with Clackamas County, and he does child abuse investigation. That's all he does. And that was one of his key points, is that you want to turn those type of cases over automatically to law enforcement. That's their role. They know how to investigate those and interview students and the other people involved. We support Senate Bill 755 as it came over, and the amendments that are before you in the A4s, the only concerns that I had, and I think Senator Walker has mentioned those, is that on the A4s on line 6 through line 21, by placing those in section 1, you're not making that apply to private schools. And if the issue is child protection from abusers, and I think Senator Walker has laid this out pretty clearly, child abuse knows no lines of private school, public school, charter school, what have you. If you're going to make that part of the public school and applicable to public charter schools in the interest of protecting kids, I think that should also apply to private schools. As to the issue of receiving a report, and I'm looking specifically here on the amendment on page 1, line 12 through 14, where it says that any school district that receives a report that a school district employee has abused a child shall suspend the school district employee from duty with pay until either of the next two things that occur. I spoke with our folks in our human resource department. I also spoke to a couple of school districts that have had this issue go on, and in most cases, that occurs right now. If there is a credible report, and that's the one thing that I would suggest you put in here is a credible report, because as this is written right now, or at least something along the lines that it's subject to subsection 2 above, a report from a school employee, because as this reads right now, if a student issued a report, and believe me, according to my brother, this happens, somebody doesn't like their teacher for a grade they received, or they're treating them badly in class, you know, there have been reports made, even in Clackamas County, that, hey, that teacher abused me. Well, it wasn't even a credible report. A law enforcement came down and just did a minor bit of investigation. So if you wanted to limit it to, you know, a written report from the school employee as addressed in subsection 2 above, because then I think you're getting into the issues of credibility. When another school employee is saying a school employee has abused a child, there's a certain level of credibility there automatically, but there, you want to at least have some level of credibility. And, Madam Chair, I apologize. I did not have that information when I spoke to you earlier today. I received some phone calls afterwards about that. So either limiting it to the subsection above or, you know, putting in the qualifier of a credible report takes care of some of the concerns that we have with it, because we just don't want to move a teacher out for any written report that's come in. There's got to be some level of credibility. And some of these cases do take a while to actually start the investigation rolling. While I think we heard testimony on the Senate side with the North Clackamas School District, they tend to get law enforcement there as quickly as they can, but they have a huge caseload. So it may take a while just to come out and say, well, that's not even a credible report. We're not even going to begin our investigation. I think putting a qualifier in there at least sets a level in statute that says we've got to have some sort of credible report, or even, as I said before, limiting it to that subsection directly above from another school employee takes care of those issues.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Beth Ann Darby with the Oregon Education Association. And we also have appreciated Senator Walker's leadership on this issue and working with OSBA to come to some conclusions and help get Senate Bill 755 off and moving. We also support Senate Bill 749, that the companion bill that Senator Walker mentioned. We join in the same concerns that you've heard already about the bill, and I just wanted to talk a little bit more about some of our concerns around subsection 3, and it could be that there's some tightening that can happen that might alleviate our concerns. But it just lacks a lot of clarity right now. I mean, and it doesn't. It doesn't have any distinction for whether the complaint is credible. Right now what happens is that the district administration makes an initial assessment of the seriousness of the charges and their facial validity, as well as any other information that is available immediately to determine credibility. Some charges do lack credibility, and that can be for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it's hearsay from a number of different people. It seems like we should have a little bit more basis before we go and pull somebody out of their classroom, even if it is on paid leave. That means that something serious is happening. Word gets around, and it really has an impact on both students and teachers. Quite apart from protecting the rights and reputations of employees, we also need to understand the effect on other students in the district. When a teacher is put on leave during an investigation, that means that the other students in the teacher's classes lose their regular instructor, too, and end up with a substitute. We don't know how long an investigation might take, so the district usually has to work day-to-day with substitutes. And if it takes weeks or could take weeks or months. And other students are also deprived of the continuity of instruction that they deserve. This disruption may be unavoidable when the charges are serious, but we've got to give administrators the discretion to determine when charges are not serious enough to require that disruption. And so just some clarification. And then also we join with the concern that the language needs to also apply to all education institutions, not just public schools and school districts.
Thank you. Are there questions for this panel? Oops.
Was that you, Mr. Green?
No, Madam Chair, it was not.
I'm glad you're as strong, Madam Chair, as I am about cell phones.
Actually, we fund education here with our little fine bottle, which isn't in front of me, but my hand is. So.
We have contributions have to be made to the Common School Fund if a cell phone goes off in my committee, and the Senate President actually violated that policy.
Don't you love it? Oh, whoever that was, they can leave their money with Kelly. Okay, thank you. Okay, well, and that's just a learning moment here. If your phones are on, please turn them off. Questions? I do have a question now. In regard to Senator Walker and or whoever else would care to comment, disciplinary records. Public records related to personnel discipline action of, or materials or documents supporting that action. Now, would that apply in a situation that we recently on May 5th heard about where a teacher in Staten was removed? His certification from the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission had been revoked because of an alleged sexual relationship. It had been reinstated, and they removed him from the school for another sexual abuse of a female student. Would that apply under this situation?
Madam Chair, I could try to fake that answer and say what I think it does, but we have committee counsel here, and I think that would be a better person to ask that question of, if Ms. Hunt could come forward.
Cindy Hunt, Senior Deputy Legislative Counsel. I'm not familiar with that case. However, if he was convicted of the crime of sexual abuse or something like that, then yes, this applies because that's one of the crimes that's listed in the statute that's referenced here. And, I mean, I suspect he was, but I'm not sure.
Then, if his teaching certificate had been revoked by the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, and it was reinstated by the commission, and he's now re-abusing, I have concern about, you know, what is it going to take?
Madam Chair, yeah, I'm not sure why they reinstated. You know, that would be a question maybe for the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to speak for them today. But within the four corners of Senate Bill 755, the Ann Gross version, it talks to district employees who have been convicted actually of one of those crimes, so not just had their teacher license revoked. So it would depend on whether or not he was convicted.
Madam Chair and Ms. Hunt, I do have the newspaper article in front of me because I was as stunned and alarmed as you were, Madam Chair. And it does say that this person was convicted on charges of sexual abuse 3, a Class A misdemeanor. And so I would ask Ms. Hunt if that's included within the statutes, and I believe it is.
Madam Chair, I'm not positive if that's included within the statutes because the last time I looked at the list of statutes, most of the statutes that are there are felonies and not necessarily misdemeanors. And if he was only convicted of a misdemeanor, then it may not be one of those statutes that's included in that list.
So, interesting conundrum.
But I can get back to you on that specifically.
If you wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like a response to that as well. And if that's true, I think that we could easily fix that by adding misdemeanor sexual abuse charges in the bill. And I don't, as long as they're convicted of it, and I don't think Ms. Beth Ann Darby would oppose that, would you?
No. I believe, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I did a little bit of research on this for another question that came up. And my understanding is that the list of crimes for which that are included in this bill are the crimes under which TSPC cannot issue a license. If somebody has that conviction on their license, then then TSP is not allowed to give them a license either. And that is the reason for the list of crimes in the bill. That's where they come from. So it may be that there are other issues that we need to add to there as well.
Okay. Mr. Green, did you have a comment on that?
Madam Chair, again, Jim Green, for your record, with the Oregon School Boards Association. It looks like from the article that the individual had his teaching certificate revoked in 1987. The bill that created that list of crimes, 342-143, was passed in 1993. I was involved in that legislation, crafting that. So we wouldn't have had that as a preclusionary crime at the time this individual's license was revoked. The article says it was revoked in 1987, and at that time, there wasn't that statute in place. It didn't come into place, I think, until it was either 93 or 95. I believe it was 1993 when it moved through the legislature here that said, we're going to fingerprint individuals. There's going to be a preclusionary list of crimes that applies not only to teachers, but any school employee that has direct unsupervised contact with children. So had it been in place at the time, I'm not sure if it's in the list of crimes. I know Representative March had the statute out. But we put in that list of crimes, a pretty heinous list of crimes if you look down the list of them, what the crimes are that are preclusionary. But as it applies to this case, it wouldn't have been in place at that time.
The statutory list in this instance, whether or not it applies to certification or a review of record, is another discussion.
Yes.
Yeah. Any additional questions here? Representative March?
Thanks. I just wanted to put on record, there's nothing in this bill that would hamper any investigation under the mandatory reporting requirements. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Representative March, I would say no. Senator Walker and I work very closely with legislative counsel to ensure that if there were any investigations to be ongoing, that we did not hamper them in any way, and we only aided with the public in knowing that things were going on and that kids were going to be protected.
Right.
And Madam Chair and Representative March, we talked at length about that issue because originally in the bill we had discussed that the school district must immediately begin an investigation, and that's where Mr. Green's brother, the other Mr. Green, testified that that's problematical because school districts don't know how to begin investigations. They can muck it up. Basically, what the school district needed to do was have a procedure to get that information where it needed to go so that the police can do their job. And so that's what we did. And Senate Bill 749 really outlines how a school must take care of these things so it doesn't slip through the cracks, so we don't get a phone call to some superintendent or some district person that doesn't go anywhere. And so that's why I indicated that the written complaint, that's taken care of in 749, but that's in another bill. I don't mind if it's here as well.
Thank you.
Ms. Hunt, did you have anything you wanted to address in regard to that specific question? No. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Then we will proceed to do some revising of the revision, and we'll coordinate and we'll revisit.
Okay. Madam Chair, I want to thank you very much. It's been a very thoughtful discussion, and I appreciate the opportunity to come and address you and your opportunity to make good changes.
We're honored to have you here. Thank
you.
All right,
bye-bye.
Thank you. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 755. And Mr. Keller, you'll follow through with the amendment work there. Thank you. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3053. And Mr. Keller?
Yes, ma'am. House Bill 3053A comes to us from the Veterans Affairs Committee. It establishes Oregon Troops to Teachers Program within Oregon Student Assistance Commission, provides that the program shall pay resident tuition costs of veteran, provided the veteran agrees to teach in high-poverty areas for 3 years or in subjects of mathematics, science, or special education for 4 years. Appropriates money from the general fund to commission for the purpose of the program.
Thank you. We have Representative Kopp and Colonel Mike Caldwell.
Thank you, Chairman Flores. Members of the committee, thank you for holding this hearing on House Bill 3053. For the record, I am State Representative Betty Kopp, representing House District 22. As a member of the Veterans Affairs Committee, I'm pleased to urge your support of this bill that establishes Oregon Troops to Teachers Program within the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. The Department of Defense set up a program to assist veterans become teachers in 1994. The National Defense Authorization Act of 2000 deferred the responsibility for program oversight and funding to the Oregon Department of Education. Oregon, the U.S. Department of Education. There currently is a federal program in Oregon, but only for a master's degree. A person coming out of the military that has their baccalaureate degree are the only ones that can qualify for the current federal program. The goal of the Oregon's troops of teachers is to recruit high-quality teachers for schools that serve low-income families. The program helps relieve teacher shortages, especially in math, science, special education, and other critical subject areas where the need is acute. The program also helps military personnel make successful transition into second careers in teaching. A network of state teacher-to-troop offices gives participants counseling and assistance. These are already set up through the Oregon Department of Education, and meeting the certification requirements for finding a job. Eligible people may receive a stipend up to $5,000 for tuition costs. A participant who accepts a grant must agree to teach for 3 years in a school that serves low-income students in accordance with the authorizing legislation. House Bill 3053 is requesting $165,000 matching state fund dollars to the federal program. In drafting up this bill, I worked with the Oregon Department of Education and also the, it used to be called something else, it's the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. It used to be the Oregon State Scholarship Commission, but it's hard for me to get this out. In closing, let me say this bill gives us a way to provide two important services to Oregonians who richly deserve them, military people and children from low-income families. If we can help veterans shift successfully into new civilian jobs, we certainly should do so. It is even more noble, in my view, to help them become high quality teachers in schools where students need most the benefit of their wisdom, their life skills, and their experience as military veterans. Madam Chair, members of the committee, on behalf of veterans everywhere and our students, and on behalf of low-income children who need good teachers to help them climb out of poverty, I respectfully ask you to support this bill. I know Colonel Caldwell is going to talk to some of the language within the bill, and so, you know, I will be here for further questions after he testifies.
Thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Colonel Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department, and as Representative Comp duly addressed, this is a very good bill, and we would like to see lend our support to it. However, we got one question, or we want to make sure the record reflects it. On line 14 of the bill, the intent of the committee, I believe, after watching this in the Veterans Committee, and I apologize for not getting this information up there, but it clearly states United States veteran means the definition of a veteran was discharged or released from active duty. And then if you go down to line 20, when it talks about who can actually get this, it says was discharged. In our case, in the Guard and Reservist case, you are released from active duty, but you're not discharged. And I think the carrier's intent and the committee's intent was to make this available to National Guard and Reservists, but that language could be problematic unless we either one, change it, or two, make sure the record reflects that that is the intent of the carrier, that's the intent of the bill, is to allow guardsmen in there. Because once you get released from active duty, you're still not discharged. You're still in the armed forces of the United States, but yet you've returned from your tour of duty. So that's the only concern we have. And again, I apologize. We should have caught this in veterans. I don't know why I didn't, but we didn't. So other than that, we think the bill's a great idea. It's a wonderful opportunity for people to seek a degree in education and help teach our children. So we fully support it.
And one other closing comment, Chair Flores. What's good about this is because when I worked with Oregon Department of Education, they do have the federal program in place, so there is not additional cost. They didn't think they'd have to incur any additional employees to help at a different level, and that they already have the rules and all the regulations and the language in the bill as much as possible, because they studied it in depth to make sure that, you know, there was no conflict with the current program, so that there was consistency.
Thank you. Are there questions?
Well, I was going to say Representative Barr is on our Veterans Committee. I don't know if she,
She told me she was voting no on this.
Well, thank you, Representative Combs. I can just make a comment if that pleases
Certainly.
The chair, that we all felt very strongly about Representative Combs' bill. We think that it's a great opportunity for Oregon, and it's also a great opportunity for teachers. So it's really a win-win for everyone. And I support it strongly. And I think I may have actually asked if I could be a co-sponsor.
Yes, you should. It's on there.
Okay, good.
Thank you. I have a couple quick questions. Now, I understand that the work that the Veterans Committee has been doing did provide a new definition for the word term veteran. Now, is that encompassed in the body of this bill? Whatever new definition would be coming forward as a result of this legislation, should it be enacted?
The new legislation for the term of the definition for veteran has already passed the House, passed the Senate, and it's just awaiting the governor's signature. And so we're very confident that, and ALC has told us that once that new definition is in there, then that will be the definition used in all this other legislation.
So it wouldn't create a conflict?
No.
Okay. And then one further question, if I'm... Oh, Representative Lynn, please.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And in the bill, line 23 and 24, it says high poverty area for not less than 4 years. I don't know whether this issue has been discussed, but why do we limit in this high poverty area only? Because the person is qualified, could be teaching any area.
Well, and Representative Lim, thank you for asking that question. We have learned in our revenue committee that there's three different distinctions of poverty or, you know, capacity within our state. And this one it's consistent with the federal grant. That is what the federal grant states. The second part of that is in Oregon, I did find out that that's a full third of our state. And so under that, you know, because I did, I thought, well, should we expand it to all schools? And, you know, the intent of the original writers were that to send it to the neediest. And I'm kind of biased towards our veterans. They have such a gift to offer our children and their experience that I'd really like to see it go there. But that's the rationale, is that it is consistent with the federal standard.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I'll get now to my further question. In review that was being done of the report from Legislative Fiscal, it was noted there was not a process to recover funds if the student does not complete their education or teaches prescribed by the bill, and in other words, in high poverty areas for 3 years. And is that a mechanism that we need perhaps to craft an amendment to accommodate?
Well, Chairman Flores, that was just brought to my attention today, and or else I would have done some research on that. But I would have to go back and call, you know, contact Oregon Department of Education and the Scholarship Commission to see if their rules already have that covered or if it does need to be in there. So I don't have the answer for that today.
Okay. I do have Karen Chambers from the Department of Education who deals in this area. She would like to come forward, and if you have any knowledge of how, if that has been addressed in your protocol?
She is the one in the know.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Karen Chambers, and I'm with the Department of Education, and I work with the Federal Troops to Teachers Program out of Department of Education, 255 Capitol Street Northeast here in Salem. Yes, I had the great opportunity to talk with and work a little bit with Representative Comp regarding this proposed legislation. And first, I'd like to state that the Department of Education feels that the intent of this bill is much needed in trying to help cover some of the costs to bring more quality teachers into teaching, especially in our high-need areas, especially in the areas of math and science, as I think this committee well knows, Oregon is going to face even a bigger shortage of teachers in those high-need areas in the coming years with some of our new requirements. These former military personnel have some of the most excellent applied skills in those areas and have proved to be really outstanding teachers in the classroom across the nation. As the bill was presented originally, and given the amendments, I think as we looked at it, most of the oversight or administration we felt fell with the Student Assistance Commission. So as far as the mechanism for monitoring of that sort of thing, we didn't intend that any of that would fall through Department of Education. What we had intended and had hoped was that there would be some collaboration. Certainly, as I work with participants from the federal program, and I see many of them every week who are eligible for part of the program, referral and assistance, but not the financial aspect, who can really use those dollars to complete their teacher education or complete their bachelor's so they can go on to teacher education and perhaps access federal dollars as well, being able to refer them to, you know, an Oregon funding program or tuition assistance program will be of great benefit. So some sort of coordination of names or applicants, you know, that sort of thing is what we had envisioned. But as far as the day-to-day administration or monitoring of that, we hadn't seen that falling as part of ODE. So, from the Student Assistance Commission, there might be some more light to shed on that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Margie Lau. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. The Student Assistance Commission, in working with Representative Kamp on this bill, also very much supports the concept, recognizes the need for teachers, and the great opportunity that we have in terms of combining this available interested group in being able to help them achieve that goal. We really see two options that the committee could pursue. We oversee both scholarship and loan forgiveness programs. In the loan forgiveness programs, it is more administratively challenging for us because we need to track the student not just through their education but also through the first part of their employment job placement function in order to make sure that they complete the obligations that were created in a loan forgiveness program. In a program that's a scholarship program, what we do is through a selection process, a competitive selection process, we review the person's intent, but then don't, and then we help them achieve their educational goal, but don't have to track them then for another 7-8 years in order to make sure that they've completed all of it. As many of us in the room probably can attest, the way in which we start our education and the way in which we actually apply and complete what our initial aspirations were oftentimes goes through changes throughout that career process. And we see the bill really having two objectives: one, in helping these individuals attain their educational goals, and two, to help meet the worker shortage need. Based on that, I think we feel it would probably be simplest and most appropriate to treat this as a scholarship program rather than as a loan forgiveness program. But we can operate the program under either directive. The question I'd have for council is the clause in the bill which speaks to the Student Assistance Commission having the authority to establish administrative rules, is that broad enough in order to include the collection process if the person chooses a career different than that which is envisioned in the initial language of the bill? That's where we get into cumbersome processes.
Well, that is the question before us.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I might just additionally mention that for the federal financial assistance portion, the oversight for all of that and the distribution of funds is all done by Department of Defense out of Florida. So none of that and the tracking of it or the verification that they are still teaching after 1 year, 2 years, 3 years in a high-need school or district, that none of that filters down to any of the state offices. So that's not something that the state offices are involved in with the federal program, if that makes sense.
Then do I understand you clearly that the federal program does some sort of follow-up or monitoring of individuals who are involved in this program?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. You're on the cusp of adding there.
I might take the opportunity to mention if there would be changes to this bill, perhaps. And we had talked about this a little bit previously. If there would be changes, I might just throw in that it may be confusing to call it the Oregon Troops to Teachers Program, since there is an Oregon Troops to Teachers Program. Maybe something like Teacher Education Assistance for the Military Program. You could call it TEAM. Military love acronyms, you know, the TEAM program. You just throw that out as a possibility, but there's something, because, you know, you guys might have some more creative ideas, but there just may be some confusion if we had two programs called the same. So just if the bill would go further and there would be some more work, I might just throw that out.
Okay, now you've confused me. Where did I lose the loop that there is already something called Oregon Troops to Teachers?
Oregon Troops to Teachers is located at Department of Education, part of Federal Troops to Teachers. Yes,
connected to the federal program.
Correct.
And this bill
establishes Oregon Troops to Teachers at the Student Assistance Commission.
Okay. That helps.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yet connected to the federal program.
Go ahead.
No.
Representative March.
Not.
I know what he's going to ask.
Representative March, will you make it?
Yes, let's follow up. What does the Department of Education's program do versus what this is attempting to do?
Madam Chair and Representative March, through our state office, we are representing the federal program. And as former military members, reservists, guard members, people who are looking to separate or retire from the military and want to teach in Oregon. Oregon is their home state. Maybe they're based in Oregon, or Oregon has just been a great state. They've visited here, and this is where they want to retire and live out, you know, the rest of their days. They will contact this state office seeking information about the program, how to enroll, what the requirements are. They'll seek information on licensing requirements, schools of education, what they need to do to get ready to teach. You know, if they're going to be separating or retiring in June and it's January, they're going to be here, you know, June 1st. What kinds of things can they do to be best prepared to get into the classroom? So I'll provide them kind of guidance and counseling on what the requirements are, what things they can start doing now to get best prepared. I'll help them to try to make connections to available job positions, that sort of work. The other side of it is if they have enough years of service, and for the federal program, you have to have at least 10 years of credible service with the reserve or the guard, or you have to have retired from active duty. Then you're eligible for the financial assistance that Representative Comp mentioned, the $5,000 to $10,000.
Representative Flores, Chairman Flores, and Representative March, the major difference that I see in this bill is what was just shared was the fact that this bill is for people like Colonel Caldwell shared, an active member of the Guard, somebody that has just been in the service for 2 to 4, 6 years. They come out and they're looking for a new career. They have not had but maybe a year or two of college or no college, and this supports the younger veteran. And as we have more and more veterans of coming home, in particular from this last these last wars, our unemployment rate is somewhere between 30% and 40%. And this is an opportunity, again, an opportunity to help those younger folks and get stability in their family and get off to a good career. But that, to me, that's the major difference versus the retired person, the program on the federal, or like that, a minimum of 10 years. This is for the active serviceman that's just come home and is looking for a transition in their lives.
Thank you for the clarification. Thank you for the question. You're thinking it does?
Well, yes. Yes, I, you know, so thanks. Yeah,
thank you. Representative Roland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But the reality is that that statement that there is no way to hold people accountable for not finishing or even for doing their commitment, there is no, in this particular bill, there's no way to hold them accountable for that. The scholarship is given ahead of time and it's done. Is that true or not, I guess?
Mr. or Madam Chairman, Senator or Representative Roblin, I'm just back from Ways and Means this morning, and so I'm just in split committee.
Yeah. He'll take the promoter.
Yeah.
I just got used to looking at Representative March on this side.
Yeah,
of the room. The program can operate either way. We can operate it as a scholarship program, where, again, it's really focused on helping this person achieve their educational goals, or we can operate it as a loan forgiveness program, which has got as its primary purpose recruitment of individuals to practice a particular profession in a particular part of our state. We operate currently two programs in the health care field that help us place nurses and other medical practitioners in rural, medically underserved communities. Those programs are both very effective, have very high success rates, and so I have no qualms about this program not being able to operate successfully as a loan forgiveness program. It just carries a higher administrative burden because we need to track that person then, usually for 6 or 7 years, in order to make sure that obligation is completed.
Madam Chair.
Representative
Pomp, I seem to remember that in committee we ask a question or maybe just pose the idea that a veteran would be required to sign a contract stating that he would comply with the conditions of the agreement. Wasn't that one of the points that we made?
I believe that that was brought up. I think it might have been Representative Bruin that even suggested that. And that would be, I believe, could be handled under the rules part of this, you know, determination.
So, Madam Chair, if the rules are broad enough, I mean, if the rulemaking authority is broad enough, then yes, we can craft rules, yeah. And we certainly have rules on those loan forgiveness programs where people are expected to pay back if they make other career choices.
No further questions I'm sensing here. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your consideration.
I'm trying to decide what I want to do here. I'm a little concerned about some clarification. But I don't want to hold up. I mean, I'm fully supportive of the bill.
I like the idea.
Madam Chair, maybe since this does have a fiscal impact, we could send it to the House Budget Committee, and you know, with a due pass. Yeah. But please take a look at the, you know, that cost recovery issue. I don't know if they're, you know. I can certainly discuss it with the chair over there, or. It's your pleasure. I'm, you know, I think we're all in support of the idea.
Absolutely,
it's just
getting
at the best fit.
And where that work should be done to give it, you know, I don't want to hold it up in the process. And then we're probably a little out of order to have the discussion at this point. So maybe I'll just close the public hearing and open a work session so that we have some discussion here.
Given there's that intersection with ODE and OSAC, as the Oregon Department of Education and Oregon Student Assistance Commission, and there's that little kind of confusion over whether the Oregon Department of Education, you know, they've got they're doing the federal program
for something also called this.
Yes,
state.
So, you know, I mean, it might be that the Ways and Means, or, I'm sorry, the House Budget Committee would be the appropriate venue. I know we have a hearing scheduled on the Oregon Department of Education on Monday at 8:30, and the probably the only way to get it there in time for that discussion would be to do it, to move it to that committee.
Let me ask, Representative Farr, was there any discussion about this, the name of this program, Oregon Troops to Teachers, being somehow conflicting with the federal program?
We did talk about that in the Veterans Affairs Committee, and we did come up with some clever ideas about what we could call the program, and I don't happen to have those notes here now, but I think Representative March is correct, and the Budget Committee could address that.
That would be a second piece, even as far as a name.
Well, I think the team idea was a good one.
Well, we are going to need permission from the Speaker to refer this to the House Budget Committee.
You can do it Friday.
That's one way to approach it. Do now and ask forgiveness later.
You usually get in more trouble if you're rescinding a referral than if you're adding one.
Fine. Well, Madam Chair, we send this to the floor. This will be reported back to us to send to the Budget Committee anyway, because it's about $100,000 in it. So just
right.
I like this bill. I think this is a good thing. So let's report it. Just ask forgiveness later.
There's another guy. You're very happy to offer me up on the altar, I know. But Representative March, you will remain silent now. Okay, I think that we will pursue down that path because it is a good bill, and the concept of which I know we're all very supportive. I think there are the two issues, the clarification of an accountability piece or monitoring piece, and maybe the name issue. So those would have to be addressed as it would move through the process. Representative Comp, do you agree?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, well... Madam Speaker, I ask forgiveness now.
Madam Chair, if you'd like me to make the motion, Nick, I'm in enough trouble already.
Go right ahead. Go ahead officially on the record. Yeah.
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 3053, A engrossed, to the House Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative March has moved House Bill 3053, A engrossed, to the House Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Well, seeing none, the clerk will then please call the roll.
Representative Barr? Aye.
Representative Lim?
Aye.
Representative Roland?
Aye.
Representative Hugh?
Vice
Chair Dahlem?
Vice
Chair
March?
Aye.
Chair Flores? Aye. Having received the required majority, House Bill 3053A engrossed will move to the Budget Committee pending approval with a due pass recommendation.
It's all my fault.
We will close the work session on House Bill 3053.
Madam Chair, have you assigned a carrier for this bill?
This one is going to the budget.
It's going to the budget first. That's right. Okay.
Thank you.
Forgive me for speaking out of order.
It's not at all.
No, Betty.
Oh, Betty.
Thank you very much. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2653. I think this is our second visit here.
Oh, no.
Ms. Keller? Yes, ma'am. House Bill 2653 has a -1 amendment that was presented by Representative Lim, and it reduces the amount of the tax credit from $1,000 to $500. It extends the amount of time the child needs to be in homeschool from 3 months to 7 months, and it will be applied to the tax years beginning January 2007.
Thank you. Representative Lim, is there anything further you would like to present to us today with the amendments that have been crafted?
Yes, out of a deep consideration, and so we made a proposal to change, as just a moment ago, the suggested instead of $1,500, and then implementation and that the 2007, so there is no that effect at all during this coming biennium. And also, there has been a discussion and the concerns about the only 3 months. So I thought that, so instead of 6 months, maybe just one more year to 7 months. So I think that might be appropriate, at least 7 months. So with that, hopefully, we might be able to pass this in the floor. And we, our state is very strong in home education. And then I think we need to recognize them, at least giving them some kind of a tax credit, which is a very small amount comparing to the $9,000 to $10,000 a year for students, giving them just $500. I think this is the time to recognize for the homeschoolers to do that.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Lim? Okay, then we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2653, open a work session on House Bill 2653. Representative Lim, would you like the privilege of moving your dash one amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I like to move House Bill 2653. To the floor with a two-person recommendation.
Oops,
we need
to
adopt this one first.
Adopt the
I move to adopt the dash one amendment to the 2653.
Representative Lim has moved that we adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 2653. Is there discussion? Seeing no discussion, is there objection? Seeing no objection, so moved.
Now, can I move again? Okay, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2653. You need to read that, what it said here?
Yes, sir. You have a referral, so.
A referral to where?
Revenue.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Let me see. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2653 to the floor with a two-pass as amended recommendation. And a subsequent referral to the revenue, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Lim has moved House Bill 2653 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation with a subsequent referral to the House Committee on Revenue. Is there discussion?
Madam
Representative
Chair.
Farr.
I am going to give this a courtesy vote, but you know, in thinking about this, there are a lot of people that choose to school their children in private schools. And I could see that there could possibly be a conflict because they may believe that because they choose to educate their children in private schools, they're still paying taxes to fund public education, and maybe they should receive a tax credit as well. And we may be opening up a whole can of worms because there may be another group of people that say, I don't have any children in K-12 education and I should receive a tax credit because do you see where I'm going with this? So I, you know, am not in support of this bill, but I will give it a courtesy vote so we can move it to the floor for a full vote.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Representative Lim.
I do appreciate that the Representative Farr's comment on this. That's a very valid comment and very fair one. As a matter of fact, I was thinking about it, but we cannot solve the problem all at this time. And next session, I'd like to work on the private school, how could we help them out. So if we try to move too many, it's not going to go nowhere. So let's get one thing done, and then let's move on to another next time. That's my strategy at this point.
Thank you, Representative Lim. Further discussion? Representative Martin.
Thank you. I too have some concerns about the bill. I think it's improved, but you know, I would prefer seeing this as a deduction from
as an expense
against the your earnings. So you'd adjust your earnings would be probably the better route. But I think that's a good discussion for the Revenue Committee. I, too, will give a courtesy vote for it given the situation here. And I may not vote for it on the floor if it comes in the same form.
We appreciate the courtesy, Representative March. Representative Roblin.
I'll give one more concern. And
okay.
I appreciate what Representative March said about taking it off. I think that for me is a little better. I also mentioned the last time, and I think that the one area that I think that we do have an obligation if we continue to test which is that the cost of those tests is not included here. And I think that, you know, of all the things, that's the one that I think if we're going to require it, we should try to help pay for that. So with those, I will do a courtesy to revenue as well. But,
well, courtesy just abounds here, Chair.
That's a good courtesy.
Well, seeing no further discussion, then the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Having received the required courtesy votes, House Bill 2653 will pass to the floor with a new pass as amended recommendation with a subsequent referral to the House Committee on Revenue. We will close the work session on House Bill 2653. Any further business to come before this committee? Seeing none, we will close the committee. Thank you very much.